Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for January the 13th, 2020. This is Air Force veteran David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. Before I introduce our special guest this evening, retired Rear Admiral Kent Davis, who is now the Commissioner of the Alabama Department of Veteran Affairs, let me first say hello to my co-host Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard. How are you?
Hey, David. How's everybody doing out there?
Great.
I'm doing great here. It's our privilege to have Commissioner Davis on our show. I want to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show, and we welcome your views, your comments, and questions. So you can call us during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. And before I send it back to David, I just want to reiterate to our guests, to our listeners, this is a great opportunity for you to call in and to speak to the commissioner. I'm sure you veterans have some issues you'd like to address. The commissioner's in Alabama, but I'm sure it applies throughout the country. And it's a great opportunity to talk to him and ask some hard questions that hopefully the commissioner can answer, because I'm sure you want them answered. So at this point, I'm going to send it back to David, and I hope you people call in. Again, that number is 1-888-627-6008. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. And our special guest is Commissioner Kent Davis, the head of the Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs. He brings to that position an impressive record of professional achievement with more than 30 years of senior communication, management, legal, and military experience. He retired from military service in 2016 as Vice Chief of Information for the Navy at the rank of Rear Admiral Lower Half. He previously served as the first Chief Communication Officer for the Commander and President, Air University, Maxwell Air Force Base, Alabama, as the Director of Communication Outreach Efforts in support of all Air Force education programs presented by Air University. He also served as Director of Economic Development and External Affairs and City Manager for the City of Anniston, Alabama. And he also served for 14 years in the United States Department of Homeland Security as a Senior Attorney and Executive. Prior to his position with DHS, he worked for 2 years as an attorney at the distinguished law firm of King & Spalding in Atlanta. During his many years of military service, among numerous other military deployments in 2006 and 2012, he completed lengthy combat zone deployments in conjunction with the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Prior to his simultaneous civilian and Navy reserve career, Commissioner Davis served as an active duty attorney in the U.S. Army Judge Advocate General's Corps, serving with distinction as trial counsel at U.S. Army Reserve Command and ethics counsel at U.S. Army Forces Command, both located at Fort McPherson, Georgia. Before that, he served as an active duty officer in the U.S. Navy, completing tours of duty aboard the battleship USS Missouri and the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln, as well as a lengthy shore assignment at Naval Air Station Atlanta. In his present position as Commissioner of the Alabama Department of Veteran Affairs, he leads and manages the agency's many operations to help military veterans in Alabama, and he oversees 112 state employees in 67 counties, as well as over 900 contract health service providers. He also manages an agency budget of over $200 million a year. So without further ado, let's welcome Commissioner Kent Davis to the Veterans News Hour. How are you this evening, sir, and how are things in the great state of Alabama?
I'm doing great, David. A little rainy here. We've had some bad weather the last couple of days, you may have seen, but we're doing great today, and thanks so much for having me on.
Well, it's our privilege, sir, and as just as a side note, I'm an Air Force veteran, served in the Air Force JAG, and I spent, in my 20 years of active reserve service, I probably spent about a cumulative total of about a year in at Maxwell Air Force Base, which I know you're very familiar with there, and in Alabama and went to squadron officer school there at Air University. So it's a place near and dear to my heart, starting with the very beginning of my Air Force service as a young JAG. So, again, it's our privilege to have you with us. I know there's a lot that you can and will tell us about veteran programs in Alabama, but if I could begin by asking you to describe for us and our listeners your department's mission and its relation to the federal government's Department of Veteran Affairs.
Yeah, David, great question. So every state has a some form of Department of Veterans Affairs, might go by a different name. And those state departments serve a completely complementary role to the federal VA. It really is a partnership. So just to explain quickly, the federal VA has three major functions. They run the Veterans Health Administration, which is the medical, short-term medical needs of veterans. They also run the Veterans Benefits Administration, which a lot of people are familiar with. Those are the individual payments for disability and things like that. And then finally, the National Cemetery Administration. And of course, we have a strong rapport here in Alabama. In every state, the state VA and federal VA folks work very closely together to take care of their internal population of veterans. So here in Alabama, and this is pretty similar to a lot of other states, we have four major functions. I mentioned, you know, the federal government is in charge of the short-term medical needs through their hospitals and clinics and vet centers. Well, in Alabama, we run a series of state veterans homes. These are nursing care facilities for veterans. We also have an assisted living center amongst our four state veterans homes. We also operate a veterans cemetery system, as do most states, in conjunction with the federal government to ensure that we have geographic coverage for all veterans in the state for their final resting place. In Alabama, a little unique, another complementary role, we run a dependent scholarship program for the dependents of disabled veterans, and that complements the GI Bill program for veterans that the federal government sponsors. And last but not least, amongst our four pillar missions in the Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs, we operate a series of veteran service offices around the state of Alabama. We have 50 of those offices geographically dispersed around the state, and those veteran service offices provide counseling, advocacy, and referral services to our state veterans. They assist them with their applications for state benefits, federal benefits, and anything else that we think they might need a little assistance with. And those services are free, and again, they're geographically dispersed around the state to put us in direct contact with our great veterans. That's pretty similar to the operation in most states around the U.S. Again, I want to stress it's a partnership between the federal VA and the state VA, and between those two entities, we fill the gaps and try to take care of our great veterans.
Well, that's a lot of services provided. Commissioner Davis, what would you see as, or what do you see from your vantage point as some of the biggest current issues that are facing veterans and their families?
Yeah, another great question, David. There's two things we're working on right now that we see as critical in Alabama, and I would say this is pretty common across the United States. One is those state veterans homes, there is a growing need for long-term care for veterans, especially with the aging population of World War II, Korean veterans, and we're starting to see Vietnam era and even in later conflicts, the need for those long-term care facilities. We did a feasibility study here in Alabama about a year ago that showed that we're going to have a shortfall in resident beds in our state veterans homes going through the year 2045. So we've already committed to build a fifth veterans home here in the state of Alabama. And I know most states look at their aging population of veterans and try to figure out, do they need more state veterans homes to meet that need? So that's one need we're working on diligently. We've already picked a site for our new state veterans home, and that'll keep us busy the next 2 to 3 years on that construction project. The other thing, and it's a little sad topic, most states are seeing a rise in veteran suicides, and that's certainly true here in Alabama. The Alabama rate, unfortunately, for suicides amongst veterans is has been on the rise, and it's amongst the worst amongst the United States. I'm proud to say that the state of Alabama recognized that special issue. And this past year, the state legislature passed resolution, create a joint resolution, creating a new state task force on veteran suicides. Again, working with the federal government, but trying to bring in all of the organizations that might be involved in that crisis, and I will call it a crisis, from mental health, federal VA, to state agencies that are involved in that, and trying to mobilize some assets that might get after that issue and try to bring that veteran suicide rate down. So I would say those are two critical issues right now that we're working on in the state of Alabama, and I know a lot of my brothers and sisters around the United States are interested in those issues as well.
Yes, sir, and we've had some guests on some of our prior shows that have talked about some of those. We had on one of our shows about a year ago the mother of an Air Force veteran who took his life due to suicide after combat deployment. Very tragic. She and her husband have started a group, a support group for veterans, a private group in the panhandle part of Florida. And they're trying to have a positive impact. And we've seen other private groups that sort of complement what county and state and the federal agencies are doing. We interviewed the director of a place called Camp Hope in Houston. It's run by the PTSD Foundation of America that really emphasizes kind of an in-residence treatment for PTSD, big emphasis on peer-to-peer support from veterans. You know, a lot of combat veterans, they seem most comfortable in relating to other combat veterans. And I was wondering, I guess, to kind of segue into a question, Mr. Davis, would be, do you see a role in Alabama where private organizations are stepping up, veteran organizations, to help?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, and that's an awesome project in Texas. We're finding organizations here in Alabama that are either heavily involved or sometimes indirectly involved in suicide prevention for veterans. And a couple of examples here in Alabama that we're pretty familiar with. The American Legion here in Alabama sponsors a retreat aimed at high-risk veterans that have been identified as that might be a special risk of suicide. That's been a very successful retreat program. In fact, all of the graduates of that retreat program have gone on. They have not had a single victim of suicide who's a graduate of that program. There are other groups. There's a group in Alabama called the Krulak Marines, which reach out to at-risk veterans and try to do intervention and suicide prevention. We're finding there are faith-based organizations that are heavily involved in suicide prevention, intervention. Part of the task of this new task force in Alabama is to find out what assets are out there, do a little bit of gap analysis, both subject matter and geographically within the state, and see if we can tie those groups together and advertise their services to our great veterans and make sure that they know that, you know, you don't have to face issues alone. There are plenty of groups from the federal VA, the state VA, to those private sector organizations that can help you. And communication is going to be a big part of their effort, getting the word out.
Oh, exactly. And that's one reason why we have this show, to help kind of spread the word. And let me turn it over to Rick Hurley, because I know Rick has a lot of personal experience and has helped a couple veterans get into Camp Hope. And maybe, Rick, maybe you'd like to offer you some thoughts on particularly the role of the interplay between private organizations and the county, state, federal agencies.
Sure. First, Commissioner Davis, welcome to our show. It's an honor to have you tonight.
Thanks, Rick.
You know, the whole concept of treating PTSD is, in my opinion anyway, and I'm kind of in the trenches with veterans every day, helping them with their claims. It's constantly evolving. There are all sorts of, just seems like, new methods that are coming up to try to help these veterans to deal with the trauma that they experience while in service. And that Camp Hope, I've sent a number of clients from not only Florida, but I've also sent them from Alabama and Georgia to Camp Hope. And one of the things that Camp Hope does is if the veteran has a little bit of a criminal situation going on, might be a low-level misdemeanor type of offense. It might be an alcohol-related DUI or a drug offense. A lot of these judges will, you know, once I make them aware of Camp Hope, will turn around and in lieu of incarcerating the veteran, they'll let them go to Camp Hope, put them into almost like a PTI, a pretrial intervention type of program.
Right.
And then once they successfully complete the program at Camp Hope, which could be anywhere from at a minimum of 90 days, and I've seen it over a year, then everything, the slate gets wiped clean, provided that they complete the program. So that's just one, you know, it's a nonprofit, but, you know, it's a private enterprise that has been has had a lot of success.
Yeah, Rick, you brought up a couple of really important points. You talked about the evolution of how we recognize and respond to PTSD. I really have seen a lot of changes recently, but over the past few decades especially. My father was a World War II veteran. He was badly wounded in the Battle of the Bulge. Now, they didn't call it PTSD then. There is no doubt now when I look back growing up that my dad suffered from PTSD. He's long deceased now, but now just recognizing that it is an issue and that there are treatments available, we've come a very long way. And the second point that you brought up, so many of these issues are interrelated. We are working heavily in Alabama with the court system and even the correctional system on identifying veterans who find that they're in the justice system somehow. And we're trying to encourage veteran treatment courts and identifying veterans that are incarcerated so we don't forget about those unique populations. And the goal is to get them back on the straight and narrow and make sure we get benefits started if we need to and get them the services because we want them to be productive citizens and return to a normal life. So I'm glad you mentioned the court system because we're finding judges are and district attorney offices are interested in diversionary programs and alternative disciplinary systems, and that's heartening to see.
Absolutely. Florida has now adopted the Veterans Court in, I would say, at least a third of our counties have it. And I've been involved with the Hillsborough County and Pinellas County, which is over by Tampa and St. Pete, both representing somebody, veterans as well as mentoring. Because what I don't know about Alabama, but in Florida what they do is first you have your lawyer who's representing the veteran, but then each veteran has a mentor who's also a veteran. And
that's pretty much the national model.
Yes, and he serves as his quasi-probation officer. And it's an outstanding program.
It is, and that's pretty much the national model. Using those mentors, fellow veterans, are key to the program. Usually 12-month programs, but you know the benefits are the recidivism rate for those programs are very low. They're relatively inexpensive, and they have a very high success rate, and the veteran themselves, those charges can be dismissed if they successfully complete the program.
Yeah. Before I started doing veterans law, I have done a lot of state criminal and federal criminal law, so I'm very familiar with the criminal side of the law. As I said, I'm in the trenches with a lot of veterans, and I got to say, I've been in the trenches in Montgomery, Alabama. I've gone there on a number of occasions to represent veterans, and I just want to commend you on that office there. They've always been extremely hospitable very helpful whenever I've gone up there to represent veterans. I think you need more space. You need a little bigger space up there, but everyone that works there, they're all very terrific people, and they've always been very cordial. So I just want to let you know
Thanks for saying that. If you ever find yourself back in Montgomery, please let me know. We'll link up. I mean it.
Well, I've got a case there in about a month and a half, so I'll take you up on that.
Absolutely.
And as I said, you know, I'm a lawyer that's helping veterans across the country with disability claims, as well as Alabama veterans. And it seems to me that the changes in the federal VA's claims and appeal system in the last year have radically shifted more of the burden on the veterans and their representatives in order to be successful, particularly after an initial denial by the VA. Can you share with us any thoughts and recommendations you have on the new system?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. First of all, here in Alabama, and this may be unique to Alabama because I certainly can't speak for other states, you know, a veteran is trying to navigate their benefits, claims process. They really have three options. They can try to navigate it themselves. I don't recommend that. As you know, it can be very complicated. They can turn to a veteran service organization if they want to, one of their veteran service officers for assistance. They do a great job. Surprisingly, here in Alabama, only about 15% of our almost 400,000 veterans are members of a veteran service organization. So for 85% of them, realistically, their choice is turning to the state veteran service officer system for assistance. And those VSOs, as we call them, can sign a power of attorney and represent them all the way up to the appeals process. It can be very complicated. And by the way, I say that as a former attorney. I practiced law for 16 years and occasionally did some pro bono work for veterans, and I know it's real heartening to do that. It is a complicated process. I think there are some hopeful signs. As you probably know, earlier, well, about a year ago, in February of 2019, the Appeals Modernization Act was passed, which does give veterans some options, at least on appealing their claims applications. Still a little early to see, I think, whether that's going to be a successful amendment to the process, but at least it gives hope that Congress and the administration are interested in real reform and how claims and appeals are processed, trying to shorten the process. You probably know sometimes it can take a while in addition to the complication that you face. So I'm hopeful that there are some steps being taken within the past year that might lead to some real changes in how that whole process works.
Commissioner, before I pass it back over to David, I just wanted to ask you another question that's been boggling me for a long time. And I'm a former president of a county bar association, lawyer association in New Jersey, and I was very active in the state bar association in New Jersey for 15 years, and held various chairs and everything else. And one of the things that I implemented, now it's going to be, let's see, 22 years ago in New Jersey, was a mandatory binding mediation, almost like an arbitration program, that was required prior to any case, non-criminal, going before you got to trial.
Yeah.
And in the family law and the civil law, you had to go to mediation. And, you know, this was conducted with lawyers, and it was extremely helpful in getting our numbers. At that time, our numbers in New Jersey were so high at the family level and the civil level and the criminal level. They were out of sight, out of mind. But this program that I helped initiate reduced those below half, and they still use that program to this day. My question to you is, why don't we have some more why don't we have some transparency within the system between the representative, whether it's the attorney or a VSO, and the people at the VA, the decision review officers, and encourage the people at the VA to pick up the phone, call your admin, because we are adversaries. No two ways about it. This is an adversarial process. Call your adversary and start getting some communication going back and forth. So that, you know, I know what you need. You tell me what I need to give you in order for you to go forward with the claim. Instead, we've got this system now that just, I have no idea what's on, you know, if I'm dealing with veterans' claims, I have no idea what's on the VA's mind about my client's claim. Then all of a sudden I get some letter that says denied.
Yeah.
It just seems to me that if we had some more better transparency and some conversation, actual communication between the parties, I think we'd really serve our veterans better. How do you feel about that?
I agree heavily. So down here in Alabama, we say you are preaching to the choir, brother. I practiced law for 16 years, and I'm a huge proponent of what we call alternative dispute resolution. And you're absolutely right. I practiced over in Atlanta for a while, and I know in Fulton County court system, there are many judges that won't even talk to you unless you can certify that you've tried some kind of alternative dispute resolution with the attorney sitting down, oftentimes with a mediator, and I think that's a very good model. I found that about 75% of my cases that went to ADR, as we call it, could be settled on amicable terms between the two parties. I think that model would work very well in the VA claims and appeals process. This is not necessarily a defense of my brothers and sisters on the federal VA side. I do think sometimes the workload just overwhelms them. I see that across the nation. I hear it from my counterparts in other states. Our veteran service officers in the state, they can access the records. Of course, they can sign a power of attorney and represent individual veterans. And I will say most of the time, they do have a pretty good rapport with their federal counterparts. Now, one thing we've done here in Alabama that's helped, we have a satellite state office over in the federal VA facility here in Montgomery that deals directly with their claims and appeals personnel. And we have, when we have a especially problematic case, we can walk right down the hall and work with our federal counterparts and say, what's happening with this? You know, the veteran's not even getting information. Can you help us out with that? And they're pretty responsive. Sometimes that human contact is very important. And we've tried to help that by putting a permanent satellite office from the state over in the federal facility just for that particular purpose.
Well, that's great. And I'll offer this up to you because I was very, the program that I initiated, like I said, it's still in place today. So if you're ever sitting down with the other directors from around the country and you want to sit down and see how we can maybe tweak the system a little bit and get some good mediation going, alternative dispute resolution, give me a call. I'll be happy to help out.
Your timing is perfect, and that's why I meant the next time you're down here in Montgomery, you let me know. We'll link up and talk about this because at the end of February, there's a big conference in Washington, D.C., amongst the state directors of Veterans Affairs. 50 states get together, and we talk about things just like this. So I'll be glad to carry the torch on that.
That's great. Thank you very much. David, back to you.
Well, thank you. And if I could add my personal, non-politically correct perspective is, you know, Rick and I will talk to VA employees, federal VA employees from regional offices around the country. And I have noticed that in some of the southern state regional offices, the employees are just much nicer. They're just, I think it's the southern courtesy. You know, I grew up in Florida, but I really think there's something to it in some of the southern states that the employees, being from the states that they're from, that really, I don't know, maybe Rick sees things differently, but that's my viewpoint. Back to a question, Commissioner Davis, if I could ask you this. I know in your accomplishments, you were the Director of Economic Development for Anniston, Alabama, and I was wondering if maybe what insights you could offer for veterans. One of the big issues for veterans, you know, they leave active duty, they're making that transition back to civilian life and getting a job, transferring those military skills to civilian. Any thoughts or information you can offer to our listeners on the employment issue?
Yeah, a couple of ideas. We partner often on veterans fairs, which quite often are heavy on employment opportunities. And I'll give you an example. Just a few weeks ago, before the holiday season, the city of Hoover, Alabama, sponsored a great veterans fair, and a lot of potential employers were there, and they hired a lot of people, and it was geared only towards military veterans that might need employment opportunities. So I would tell veterans, take advantage of those. They really are pretty successful. If there's somebody sponsoring a veterans fair that includes employers, go visit them. You put on a nice suit, take your resume, and you'd be amazed at the results. And sometimes the networking that occurs at those veterans fairs. The other thing I would take advantage of is training opportunities and grant opportunities. There are a lot of agencies that assist with transition. It's not only the state and federal VA, but I found out more and more recently the U.S. Department of Agriculture tries to encourage military veterans through programs to get into the agriculture business. We find out more and more about agencies that have programs like that that do outreach for veterans. So our veteran service officers here in Alabama try to promulgate that information. So take advantage of that as well. And for veterans that are trying to start up a business, the Small Business Administration can be of great help. There really are a lot of programs out there geared specifically towards veterans. So take advantage of them, veterans. You really should. You earn those benefits, and you should seek them out.
Well, that's great. And I think just getting the word out will make a big difference. And another program that I've seen in Florida is the Troops to Teachers program.
Because there's
a public teachers shortage in the state of Florida. The state's really growing in population, and they don't have enough public school teachers. So there's a program for that. But also the State Department of Agriculture, similar things as you've described. Sir, let me ask you one other thing. Are there other issues that you'd like to bring to the attention of our listeners? And how can they find out more, either through the Internet or from your department's offices throughout the state of Alabama?
Thanks for bringing that up. We have revamped our website completely. We recognize that when we're communicating with veterans, sometimes it's a generational thing. The way you communicate with a World War II or Korean veteran might be a little different from someone who's an Iraq-Afghanistan war veteran. We recognized about a year ago that our website was out of date, really was not 21st century kind of website. Information wasn't really user-friendly, so we did a complete zero-based review of our website, and this past summer we rolled out a new website, and we're trying to make it one-stop shopping for veterans for information about all of their benefits and services, and even a referral to private sector nonprofit organizations that assist veterans. Part of our website is something called the Alabama Executive Veterans Network, or AlaVetNet, which is a repository of information about any organization in Alabama, agencies, government agencies, or those private sectors, nonprofit and faith-based organizations that provide services. So communication is key. We're trying to get more and more 21st century style in our communications. That also includes how we train our veteran service officers that are spread around the state. We are seriously exploring technologies, using things like YouTube channel to get information out to veterans and our veteran service officers on the latest changes. And I'll give you an example. When the Appeals Modernization Act was enacted in early 2019, it hit so suddenly, getting our veteran service officers trained and training them to disseminate the information, it was a scramble. So we had to be a little innovative and do some mobile training, do some video training and things like that, trying to get everybody on board with those pretty sudden changes that occurred at the federal level. That's always a challenge, and we're trying to stay on top of that. We're using things like social media. We've added an events calendar to our website that lets veterans around the state know when things like veterans fairs are coming up, and those can range from pure information fairs to job fairs to we have one coming up here in Montgomery in February, veterans, we call it a VIAC event. It's a combination information fair and actual processing of claims at those fairs. So
Wow. We
try to promulgate all that information on our website now so that it's one-stop shopping for veterans.
Well, I checked that out. It is an impressive website, as you said, there's a lot of information out there. We've discovered the same challenge that you've described with the getting acclimated to the appeals modernization and the amount of information out there and the confusing information is something that we're continuing to deal with, and I know a lot of VSOs do as well. So.
Here's another quick one that's come up in the last few weeks. The whole Blue Water Navy claims for Vietnam.
There was mass confusion
about when claims were going to be accepted, when they were going to start processing them. And just getting the latest information out to our veteran service officers was a bit of a challenge. We think we've got it in hand now, and January 1st, we hope the processing of those claims started.
Yeah, I was talking to...
Go ahead, Rick.
I was talking to some contacts that I have at the St. Pete regional office, and up until about a week or so ago, they were still kind of wondering what was going to go on. They were going to start getting some training, but they were kind of they felt that they were in the dark on how to process these blue water claims.
Yeah, so I think everybody was in a little bit of a scramble to communicate what was happening and what the process was going to be.
You know, one thing, Commissioner, I want to really compliment the VA on, and you can take this back to your other commissioners, the BVA's use of the video hearings now, which can be held at the lawyer's office.
Yeah.
You know, they started that like 2 or 3 months ago, and I've already had, five video hearings in my office, and they are just outstanding. For a lot of the veterans in Florida, you know, we only have two places for the video hearings, St. Pete and West Palm Beach. And if you're in Central Florida or North Florida, you know, you just can't get down there. And when we're talking about these older veterans, Vietnam vets who have mental and physical issues, they just can't get there. And so they weren't able to have a hearing. And now they're able to have a hearing, and they follow up the hearing, as you know, they follow up the hearing with a survey both to the lawyer and to the veteran for feedback. So I just think it's a great thing that's now happening. That's, you know, another plus side to the VA.
I agree.
I can be very critical of the VA, but that's terrific what they're doing.
Yeah, technology is catching up and helping with not only legal issues, but an analogy in the medical system as well with telemedicine. You know, 20, 30 years ago, we never thought about consulting with a doctor via teleconference, but that's becoming more common for minor routine things for someone who has trouble traveling, it's not convenient, or there might be scheduling issues. Telemedicine is helping, as well as the technology and teleconferencing in the legal system as well. So, again, we're trying to help everybody jump into the 21st century.
Yep.
Well, that's
I think it's a great team effort between the federal VA, state, county, private organizations that we see from our vantage point, kind of a system of trying to make continuous progress. And I certainly appreciate you being on our show tonight, Commissioner Davis. Before we go, anything else you would like to share with us or our listeners, particularly about the programs in Alabama?
The only thing I want to stress in closing is, and we've hit upon this over and over again, this really is a partnership. It's not just, some people just think of the federal VA when they think of veteran services. Federal VA is one partner. You have the state VA and many, many private organizations, from nonprofits to faith-based organizations. We really are all in this together. And a lot of times that requires communication. We all need to get a little bit better with that. But I just want to stress that partnership over and over again.
Well, thank you so much. And Rick, before we go to our next, any other thoughts or questions for Commissioner Davis?
No, I just want to, first of all, I want to thank you, Commissioner, for appearing on our show tonight, because we've tried to get other people from the VA to be our guests, and we haven't been as successful. So I really want to appreciate and thank you for being on our show, because you obviously, when we talk about communication, the first, you're a man who's pushing that forward, because appearing on our show, you do want to communicate, and you want to get it out there to all these veterans about, you know, what you're doing and how helpful
absolutely
you can be to the system. So thank you very, very much.
Yes,
and thank you also
to Belinda from your staff for helping to arrange this wonderful interview, and thank you again for being on our show. We extend our very best wishes to you and to all members of the Alabama Department of Veteran Affairs. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you both.
Good night.
I'll see you in Montgomery.
Okay, please do. Thanks so much.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Yep.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was wonderful, and thanks again to Commissioner Kent Davis, the Commissioner of the Alabama Department of Veteran Affairs, for being our special guest tonight. And we've got a few items of news before we wrap up tonight. Before I get to some news, Rick, any thoughts?
Well, I just think it's terrific. We've now how long have we been running this show now, David?
3 years.
Over three years.
Three years this week. Three years this week.
And in 3 years, this is the first time that we've actually had someone from that side of the advocacy on our show. And I really am. I think it's terrific that Commissioner Davis agreed to do our show tonight.
Yeah. Well, we've also had.
You know, there's a lot going on. There's, you know, a lot of people aren't big fans of the VA, and you and I have been very critical of the VA. So, as the commissioner said, you know, the fact that he's willing to communicate and the importance of communication and using the technology are all great signs for what's going on in Alabama. I do have one question for you there, David. You mentioned about Southern Hospitality. And so are we throwing Florida into the Southern Hospitality? Or
No, unfortunately, you're sending
that up north because there's so many transplants from the Northeast.
Well, now the only part of Florida that has Southern Hospitality is the Panhandle part.
right.
And if other residents of Florida are offended by that, I will apologize. But I really believe that because when I was in the service, I was stationed in Alabama. I spent a cumulative of probably about a year in Montgomery at Maxwell Air Force Base. I did, when I was on active duty, my active duty unit went TDY to work with Birmingham, Alabama Air National Guard unit. And being stationed in North Carolina for several years and doing reserve duty in other places in the South, other bases in the South, The civilian workforce in these organizations are usually natives of that state, and I really sincerely believe you will see a difference in the courtesy and the care in some of the southern states. And if that's a plug for the southern states, well, that's what it's intended to be. But I think it's a good thing, and I really appreciate Commissioner Davis being on our show. You know, we have had his counterparts from North Carolina and Arizona on our show before, the state-level department of the VA, not the federal VA. But we also have the New Mexico secretary of the state VA. We're working out a day for her to be on our show sometime soon. So I think it's great to hear the perspectives of the state agencies as well as he described, you know, get a sense of the relationship between the state and the federal VA. And as he pointed out, I think this is also true in most states, is that so many veterans are represented by state VSOs as opposed to some of these private veteran groups like American Legion or VFW, et cetera. So the state agencies play a big role. I know in the state of Florida, the state agency plays a big role in a lot of issues, including employment and training and job fairs, as Commissioner Davis mentioned. But before we run out of time, I wanted to segue to an issue that was mentioned earlier, which is the Blue Water Navy issue for Vietnam veterans who served in the Blue Water Navy. As Commissioner Davis mentioned, you know, the recent changes in that going into effect, according to the federal VA, January 1st of this year, of this month, just less than 2 weeks ago. I want to put in a plug for a guest we're going to have on our show in 2 weeks, John Wells, who's now the director of litigation, used to be the executive director of Military Veterans Advocacy based in Louisiana. And his organization is sponsoring a seminar on February 1st. So mark your calendars. If you're going to be in Tampa or the Tampa Bay area, go to their website, militaryveteransadvocacy.org/reception.html, and sign up to attend the February 1st, 2020 seminar in Tampa. It's going to be at the Marriott Tampa West Shore Hotel, which is just a very short distance to Tampa International Airport. And it'll be a very valuable seminar on these new rules on the Blue Water Navy and the VA. They're going to talk about and John Wells is not only an attorney, but he's a retired Navy commander, surface warfare officer, a lot of experience, obviously, because of, you know, his Navy experience, but as his legal experience, he actually brought the case Procopio versus Wilkie, and he's been a big presence in Washington lobbying the VA and congressional offices on this issue. So, again, big seminar coming up February 1st, 2020 in Tampa, Blue Water Navy issues and the VA, sponsored by the Military Veterans Advocacy. Let me turn things back over to Rick Hurley.
Well, I was just thinking out loud, or thinking to myself about, the VA is training the VSOs, and one of the things that Commissioner Davis acknowledged is that we are in an adversarial situation with the VA. I'm glad that, he recognizes that, because, that to me is it's part of the problem. It is the way it is, I guess, is the best way to put it. It is the way it is. And because it's an adversarial proceeding now, his agreement that we need more communication, more transparency is just essential for our veterans. Any veterans that are listening out there, I think what you can get from the interview with Commissioner Davis is that there is hope. I've been very negative about the VA and how it treats the veterans, but clearly Commissioner Davis is showing that there is efforts being made. So I think we can reasonably conclude that there is some hope down the road there, that the system will improve, because Lord knows it needs improvement. This whole new system, David and I, when it first was being implemented, David and I said it's not going to work, and we've seen that it hasn't worked. But maybe with ideas like the Commissioner Davis has, that will change all that. So we just got to keep fighting. And then veterans, you just got to keep fighting. Don't give up. Don't give up.
Yep. So. Well, I think communication is a big part of it, and training. Mr. Davis mentioned how his department had to train the state-level VSOs about all the changes in the appeals modernization thing. And you and I are seeing this, and I expect this is a common problem throughout the country with veteran service officers and organizations trying to grapple with the changes. And what also needs to be publicized, I think, and I'm going to put a plug in for the National Veterans Legal Services Program, based in Washington, D.C., which is a private organization. It's not connected to the VA, but it publishes, as you know, the Veterans Benefit Manual. They've been doing that for decades. And it is in my personal opinion, it is the single most important volume of veterans disability law materials. It's basically several thousand pages, but it's basically a one-volume encyclopedia of just about everything you need to know. And it's well-cited with footnotes to the actual regulations, the statutes, the case law, the forms, etc. So as far as promoting and passing on information, that's something that I would recommend to veterans, and particularly veteran service officers out there, is the Veteran Benefit Manual. But there are so many others out there, and as far as resources, and I welcome our listeners to share their experiences. Now, we've just got a few minutes left on our show, Rick, and kind of segue on to the discussion earlier about the importance of preventing veteran suicides and helping veterans make that transition from military service to civilian life. If you would tell us about the VA's program called Coaching Into Care.
Absolutely, and we routinely close our show with this topic, the Coaching Into Care program. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. So Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Again, let me say it again. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you, a family member, to help you help your veteran. It's a great program, and this program, you can call the program at 1-888-823-7458. Again, 888-823-7458. The hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, that number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I would like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has a Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, that number at the Veterans Crisis Line is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Rick. It's been an interesting evening. Thanks very much again to Rear Admiral retired Kent Davis, who is presently the commissioner of the Alabama State Department of Veteran Affairs, based in Montgomery, Alabama. We'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on the great BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli, as well as Corey and Hurley Law Group. Also like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, for his great work and support every week. We hope you'll tune in next week at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time here on bbsradio.com, Station 1, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. We have some outstanding guests lined up in the next few weeks and months, and we hope you'll stay tuned. If you have any questions, you can reach us through our show's website, which is bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. You have Rick Hurley and my phone numbers and emails. Send us your thoughts, ideas, suggestions, and if you know anyone that would like to be a guest on our show, we'd welcome that as well. So we hope you have a great week, and we hope you'll tune in next Monday, same time, same station. Until then, have a great week. Good evening.